well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Oh boy, there is a lot to talk about. Now listen, I want to let you know, first of all, that we're going to be talking with Stephen Gutowski of The Reload on Wednesday's Cam and Company about Judge Joel Cohen's decision in New York denying New York Attorney General Letitia James's request that the NRA have an outside monitor appointed to oversee its non-political spending. The judge denied that request on Monday, but did issue a 10-year ban on former NRA Executive Vice President Wayne LaPierre having a paid position with the group. Also recommended a number of internal reforms. Supposedly, the AG's office and the NRA legal team going to sit down next week and discuss those things. I read about this at Bearing Arms. I don't want to waste a lot of your time. You can find out my thoughts there. But I will just say that I hope that there'll be a swift resolution. And looking at the recommendations that Cohen has offered, I don't really see anything that onerous in there. It really does seem to be internal reforms that are designed to make the NRA's leadership more accountable to its members. And it's my opinion that the NRA would be wise to quickly adopt those recommendations instead of a prolonged legal fight over the judge's recommendations and hopefully start to pare down its legal expenses, which, you know, has been a major, major outflow for the organization, upwards of close to $200 million over the past 4 or 5 years. So that's where I am. But again, we'll talk about it more with Stephen Gutowski. Now, on today's program, we're going to be talking with Massachusetts Fire Instructor Charlie Cook. You might know him from Riding Shotgun with Charlie. There are big changes coming. As of Friday, you've got these new training mandates that are going to affect in Massachusetts, including live fire training, basically a whole new curriculum. The big question is, what are fire instructors supposed to do here? There's been, it sounds like, very little guidance from the state about all of these changes. So we're going to get it straight from the horse's mouth here in our conversation with Charlie Cook. Now, before we get to that, though, let's talk about this for just 1 second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree, physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. All right, and now let's turn our attention to what's going on in Massachusetts, where it sounds like chaos is about to ensue for those who are applying for a license to carry. Those who already have their license to carry, you're grandfathered in. But going forward, it sounds like this is going to be a real mess in Massachusetts. Let's talk about it with Charlie Cook from Riding Shotgun with Charlie. Take a look and a listen. Charlie, thanks for coming on the program today, sir. It's good to see you and not in the driver's seat.
Cam, it's always a pleasure to see you. We need to see you at the Sporting Clays range sometime soon.
We do. Let's wait till the fall. We've had some unseasonably gross weather in Central Virginia this summer, heat index of like 105 and 80% humidity. So let's hold off for a couple more months.
that's a good idea. My attitude, I've actually gone out a couple times this summer to go shoot some trap and skeet because I want to get better to make sure that it's nice to have fun, but it's always good to beat John Petrolino too. So that's the real objective.
There is that. Well, the last time you guys came down, my shoulder was acting up, but I've actually been able to do some shooting. So I'm looking forward to the fall and we'll get together. But let's talk about another kind of shooting activity, because this Friday, and correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, Charlie, but this Friday, these new training mandates go into effect in Massachusetts, right?
I'm going to say I think so. And here's why. It's so Maura Healey, they dropped this bill on July 17th. Maura Healey signed it on July 25th. Everything talks about having an August 1st date, and then some people say, no, but really, it ends on August 1st. It starts on August 2nd. And then I've heard some people say that it doesn't go into effect 90 days until after it was signed. So now we're like, okay, is it 90 days after August 1st, or is it 90 days after when she signed it on the 25th? Confused yet? If you're confused, then I'm explaining it well.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this. Because you are a firearms instructor in the state of Massachusetts, right?
Yes.
Have you heard anything from the state since Maury Healey signed this bill into law?
I've heard nothing. Absolutely nothing. I did call my town police. And I said, hey, listen, I'm an instructor. I've got some people that wanted to take class this past weekend. What do I do? And he's like, everything looks the same on our end. And I'm like, great. I'm going to keep teaching the NRA home firearm safety course. And I'm going to keep giving people certificates. When I reach out to people and tell them, you know, when people want to sign up for classes, because obviously it's been a slow summer. You know, and it usually is, but I've had more people hear about this and they're like, hey, we want to be able to exercise our rights. We want to protect our kids. I had one woman that's a widower and she's got three young kids, wants to be able to protect her kids. So I say, hey, listen, you know, this is the class that's the NRA home firearm safety is the minimum requirement that you need in order to get your LTC or your license to carry. I always say, call the police, tell them that you're taking this class, set up your interview date as soon as possible after the class so that you can get in right away. I said, there's some weird stuff that's going on with this new law. Nobody knows what's going on. The state, of course, doesn't have a new curriculum. They don't have certified instructors. It's all a cluster. Is really what it seems like. So I'm going to keep on teaching the class. I'm going to keep on teaching the NRA home firearm safety. If it's not going to work for the chief of police, which I've heard a couple people tell me that they've set up appointments and the chiefs are like, yeah, we're not doing anything about this until it all gets hammered out, which then to me means that a right delayed is a right denied. You can have a gun license. We're just not going to give it to you. And I'm thinking to myself, let's get all these people together and let's have a class action lawsuit and sue the crap out of the state.
It sounds like a really good idea. And I know that the lawsuits are coming. But as you say, I mean, this is, you know, the amazing thing is, Charlie, they worked on this for over a year or for about a year, right? The House bill came out last summer and then there was all of that opposition. So the House pulled back and then they came up with a revised bill that they passed I think one public hearing. Senate said, I wouldn't really like that. They amended the bill and the House didn't like the changes. So then it went to a conference committee. They work on this for months and months. And then all of a sudden, you know, okay, here's the bill, 116 pages. We're going to vote on it tomorrow. And as you say, you know, it goes into effect August 1st, August 2nd. We don't really know, maybe 90 days after the bill was signed. But there's nothing in the legislation that actually says that. I mean, right? The legislation says the effective date is, I think it says as of August the 1st. Right, but if it's August the 1st, August the 2nd, it really doesn't matter because all of these new mandates they're in place on paper, but only in legislation. Right. As you say, the curriculum hasn't been updated. And you said something, in this bill, are you going to have to be certified by the state of Massachusetts to be a firearms instructor? Is that part of the changes?
So we already have that in order to, the Massachusetts State Police do not, they recognize, I think it's like 29 different courses that are approved courses. And again, at the minimum is the NRA home firearm safety. NRA basic pistol is good for a license to carry. They have like NRA basic rifle, NRA basic shotgun are good only for FID cards, firearm identification cards. So you can only have non-large capacity rifles and shotguns with those. You do have to, they don't care about, dude, you could take a class with Masada Yub. They're not going to care that you've taken MAG 40. You need to get a certificate from an instructor that's certified from the state police to give you the state certificate. And that's what the police are going to be looking for when you apply.
Okay. And so going forward, again, the curriculum has changed, right? So now you're going to have to teach, what are some of the things, suicide prevention, de-escalation tactics? I mean, there's a whole host of things.
So I made notes and I left one of my notes on the other table. Here's what it's got. So you have to do live fire. Live fire, I get it. I understand it does make sense, but I'm not going to agree to it because you shouldn't have to do this. We don't have to do it now. We haven't had to do it. I've had a gun license for 22 years. I didn't have to do it when I got my gun license. And I hate to sound like one of those old, you know, overweight, middle-aged white guys. But I didn't have to do it before. Why do I have to do it now? So, but I get that it's nice to have, and you certainly do want to be able to hit your intended target if you're carrying a gun and shooting it. You have to have live fire. You have to have a written exam. And to me, that's like, hey, listen, that sounds like the basic pistol class. Great. NRA basic pistol should be fine. Just as a side note, none of the USCCA courses are approved curriculum. It's only a couple that are only a few from the NRA, as well as like a class at SIG Academy and the Mass State Police and a couple of other classes, right? You have to have injury prevention. Here's injury prevention for me. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger. Always keep the gun unloaded until you're ready to use it. There we go. There's your injury prevention. There is suicide prevention, which to me is putting on a video and playing a video. Letting that be that, right? We've covered this. If you have questions, I don't know, talk to your primary care, talk to your therapist. What, you know, you should obviously, if you have permanent thoughts, or if you come up with a permanent thought for a you know, temporary problem, you need to talk to somebody for sure. So maybe that's just playing a video, maybe it's not. The disengagement training is really what I'm I don't want to say I'm concerned about, but what I'm confused by. So I did a quick Google search twice last week, and I did one a half hour ago. The first thing that comes up for disengagement is prevention of pathological worry disengagement. All right. The next thing that comes up under Google is other people ask about dog training disengagement. Right. So how do you get your dog engaged? How do you get your dog disengaged? So it's about four or five things down before you finally have somebody that has some tactical disengagement. And I printed that out and haven't had a chance to read it yet. So I don't know what disengagement really means. I understand they probably want to. I don't know. I've actually thought about this. I've thought about taking the verbal judo book and turning that into a class and turning around and selling it to the state for $150,000 a year, right, to let them use my course. I think that would be a great idea. but yeah, there's a lot of stuff they're not. Oh, so here's some more stuff. Here's what you also have to do. I, as an instructor, have to send, the way it works now is I give someone a certificate, and they go to their town police, they fill out an application, give them the certificate, give them $100, fingerprint photograph, do the interview. They send it to the state police. The town police do their background check. The town police send everything to the state. The state does their background check. They make the license. They send it to the local police, and they call you and you go down and pick it up. There's going to be one extra hurdle. The extra hurdle is, the other thing I have to do is I have to let the state know that I've taken a class so they can cross-reference it and see if somebody's just handing out certificates and not letting the state know they've done the class.
Okay.
The way they want it to work is I would have to let the state know that someone's taken a class. The state is then going to make their certificate and send it out to the students of the class. Then they're going to do the whole process that we just talked about. They go to the local police, do the interview with the application and a check for $100. Now, it's supposed to be 40 days. According to the mass laws, you're supposed to apply for your license and you're supposed to get an answer within 40 days. I renewed my license almost a year ago. It was 56 days. They told me it was going to be 8 weeks to get my license, and it came in 8 weeks. Now, 8 weeks is longer than 40 days. There's no recourse if somebody doesn't, if the state doesn't do this in 40 days. Now, if they can't do the license to carry within 40 days, what are the odds they're going to get the certificate out in a timely manner?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No, this is, you're right. I mean, this is another area where the government is imposing itself, right? This is something that the trainers used to do. And now, no, we're going to insert the government as the middleman. And as you say, that is another opportunity for the government to delay the exercise of a right. And a right delayed is a right denied. Yeah. Golly. All right. Now, I want to go back to the live fire portion for a second. Like you, I firmly believe that if you own a firearm, particularly if you're carrying a firearm for self-defense, you need to be competent and comfortable using that firearm. You need to go to the range on a regular basis. I don't think that should be a government mandate, however. You know, I'm a big believer in constitutional carry. So what we should do and what the government requires us to do, I think, are two very different things. But, you know, we've also talked with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League, as well as some other firearms instructors in the state of Massachusetts. And Charlie, it sounds like range access is going to be a real issue here. Because you've got just a handful of ranges that are generally open to the public. You've got a lot of, you know, private clubs that have ranges. So right. What does this mean for, you know, independent firearm instructors who maybe don't have a formal affiliation with a range? What are they supposed to do going forward?
I assume a lot of instructors do. Whether I know there's some folks that have their own ranges. But most in Massachusetts, if you want to go shooting, we don't really have public land unless you're going hunting, and then you have to go to a wildlife management area. They do say that you can shoot in the wildlife management area, but I've never done it. Hunting for me is taking the bow and arrow for a romantic walk in the woods. You know what I mean? So people have to be, they have to be a member of a sportsman's club. Now I was talking to Petrolino a couple weeks ago, and he was, you know, talking me off the ledge about all this stuff. And he's like, listen, the training requirement in New Jersey. So they went through all this in New Jersey, and he says the police didn't really want to do it. So the class wasn't necessarily difficult. I did start the process to get a New Jersey permit, get the FID card so I can transport my gun lawfully when we come down and go shooting with you. The picture of a revolver that they had was a top break revolver. Yeah. Welcome to the 1880s, right? So this is what New Jersey says revolvers look like, right? You got to break the action open and the cartridges pop out. As far as the live fire portion, Petrolino wrote an article, I think it was probably here on Bearing Arms, that said that the shooting qualification wasn't that difficult, right? And then of course he got a lot of, you know, a lot of comments that he was a bootlicker and a FUD and all this sort of stuff. So I started thinking, I'm like, let's see, if they can't have us do the FBI qualification where you're shooting at 3 yards and 5 and 7 yards and 15 and you're on one knee and you're seated and drawing from the holster and all this sort of stuff. And you got to go through 50 or 60 rounds. The qualification for the NRA basic pistol is that you shoot a gun and you hit some sort of a target. And then it's usually they talk about hitting an 8-inch paper plate. Well, that's not necessarily difficult, but I don't think you should have it. And people are going to have to, and instructors are going to have access to ranges. And there's, like you said, there's only a few public ones that that we have here in Massachusetts. So someone's going to have to bring someone to their range. Part of what my issue with talking with John about this is one of the clubs that I belong to often has events because it's a sportsman's club. It's got an indoor bar. It's got indoor plumbing and a pool table, you know, in a cinder block building, as well as the outdoor range. Well, John's like, you shouldn't worry about that. What's the big deal? Shoot outside. The very next day, I went to the range with a couple buddies. I pulled into the parking lot on a Sunday afternoon. There's usually no cars there. There's 18 cars there, and there's people outside, you know, playing volleyball and throwing horseshoes. So I'm like, I felt like a Star Wars movie. I'm like, I've got a bad feeling about this. I walked into the club, and there's a bunch of people. There's somebody at the bar, a couple guys having drinks, and there's people with party balloons everywhere. So I'm like, oh, I guess the range is closed today. I can't take some people shooting. So they're like, yeah, the party goes until 7 o'clock. Well, that's going to be a little bit too late. It's you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So having access to ranges is definitely going to be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the language in the legislation didn't get specific about what that live fire training looks like, which you kind of alluded to, right? It basically just says there needs to be a live fire component. And then it's up to the state police to actually define what that training is going to look like.
Right.
Okay. And again, Friday, maybe Saturday, the law takes effect. Maybe it's 90 days before it gets implemented, but nobody really knows.
Nobody knows.
You know, the contempt that lawmakers have for folks who are exercising their Second Amendment rights is that to me is so evident in this legislation. You know, this 116 pages are aimed almost exclusively at legal gun owners and almost exclusively making it more difficult to be a legal gun owner in the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the it really doesn't do anything to come after criminals or prevent more crime. There was just this week in the city of Worcester, or last week in the city of Worcester, there were two teenagers, a 15 and a 16-year-old, on a moped, had a gun. I don't know if they had one or two guns. They carjacked somebody about one block from a hospital. When they got caught, they started running through people's backyards. There's nothing in the bill that's going to stop that from happening. And you know what? That's already illegal. Carjacking is illegal. 15 and 16-year-olds can't have guns without gun licenses. They can't buy or possess handguns in Massachusetts. We already have laws on these books. How come these things aren't being enforced? How does this still happen when we have laws against this?
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show and giving us a little bit more light on all of the confusion. And it really does sound like this is just going to be chaotic starting this weekend. Nobody knows. Sounds like, you know, local chiefs are kind of making up the rules as they go along because they don't know. Right. And so, you know, really, this is mass confusion in the state of Massachusetts as a result of what these lawmakers have done.
Shocking.
So when is your next training class? Do you have one scheduled?
I do. I'm actually taking a course up in New Hampshire with some friends this weekend. And the second weekend in August, I actually have a couple of people signed up for class. I've got I'm hoping to go to the GOA event on the third weekend of August. And then I've got classes booked up until the Gun Rights Policy Conference at the end of September. So I'm teaching the class until I find out something different. I'm teaching the class. I'm giving people certificates. And I tell them, call your police. Make sure this is going to work. The laws are changing. Join the Gun Owners Action League. Write to your politicians. Tell them this is a bunch of bunk. And do what you can. You know, the buying frenzy has been completely nuts. I was at I had a Utah class this past weekend at Cape Gunworks, and the checkout line was snaked all the way through the building. There were probably 40 people in line to buy things. So the buying frenzy is going on as well.
Okay, so let's talk about that just for a second. I know you got to go, but you know, I've looked at the goal summary of this bill. And there is a lot of language about semi-automatic bans. Now, we know that Massachusetts has already had a ban on so-called assault weapons. Maura Healey, back when she was attorney general, decided to interpret the existing ban far more broadly than what it was on paper. Have you been able to figure out what exactly is being banned under this bill? Are we talking about common semi-automatic handguns are now going to be banned? What exactly is going to be forbidden going forward? Or is that, again, another, we don't really know.
I think it's a whole nother layer, because you hear Goal says they want to ban all the semi-autos. The legislation changes. In Massachusetts, a firearm is a handgun. They don't call it a handgun. They call it a firearm. And of course, you know this. They've changed the definition for a firearm to include rifles or shotguns. We have an approved firearm roster, which are guns that you can get from a dealer. Guess what's not on the approved firearm roster? Rifles and shotguns. So you might not be able to purchase rifles or shotguns until this gets all hammered out. And I did the Utah class on Sunday, and somebody went and bought himself a 44 Magnum lever action rifle because he doesn't know if he'll be able to buy it, you know, next week.
God, this, you know.
Right. And the whole thing, like even the, you know, so we had the 94 ban. In 1998, Mitt Romney made the 1994 ban permanent, and then Maura Healey did this in 2016. And to me, that's just where it gets really confusing. I would teach classes and I would say, all right, so here are the evil features. Pistol grip, collapsible stock, flash hider, bayonet lug, and grenade launcher. And I'm like, one of them is a modern sporting rifle. Two of them is an assault weapon. I said, but if you had a frame that was made before September 13th, 1994, it can't be an assault weapon because we didn't have a definition for what an assault weapon was. So you could have these features on something made, you know, something that's 30 years old now, but you can't have it on a newer one. But, you know, you don't want to spend $1,800 or $2,000 on a rifle when you can spend, you know, $1,000 or $1,200 on one. It's all just completely nuts and completely confusing. And the state has no idea what they're doing. And I know you talk with, I think you talked with Jim about this. They're changing the handguard to a barrel shroud. And they're calling that a barrel shroud.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So part of me is like, okay. So I tried holding up my AR and I'm like, it's hard for me to hold the AR up without putting my hand on the handguard. You know, it'd be nice to have on this a pistol brace.
Right.
So maybe they want us to put braces on them so we can shoot them better. I mean, who knows, man?
All right. Well, listen, I tell you what, let's give it another week or two, maybe another week. We'll let the effective date take effect. And I'd love to have you back on the program so we could talk about, you know, what things look like once the law actually is being enforced.
For sure. For sure.
All right. Charlie Cook.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Before I go, I want to wish you a happy 50th birthday. I'm honored that I get to be on your show on your 50th birthday. This was really cool.
Well, the 50th birthday is not for a few days. I still have a few more days in my 40s left. But
all right.
Yeah. So you are part of the not that there's going to be a big celebration, but I appreciate that very much. Yeah, I'm going to enjoy you get to be here as I enjoy the waning days of my 40s, which frankly, I think is even better than being around when I turn 50, because I don't think anybody's going to want to be around me that day. So, Charlie,
it'll be fine.
Oh, no, it'll be fine. It's fine. It's just one of those weird milestones in life, you know, that when you're growing up, you think, man, 50's old. And then when you get ready to turn 50, you're like, I don't feel any different than I did when I was 35, except maybe my knees hurt a little bit more, you know, so it's just one of those weird things. But anyway, Charlie, thank you again. Make sure that you're following Charlie Cook on social media, Riding Shotgun with Charlie. Do you have any fun interviews coming up you want to plug?
Geez, I just did one with Lucretia Hughes-Klukin.
Oh, yeah.
I put that out recently. She's a lot of fun. And I have one with Don Mann that's going to be dropping soon. And I have one with Dick Heller as well. So those are going to be coming out in the next month or so.
Awesome. All right. Well, I will be looking forward to seeing those and looking forward to having you back on the program again. Thanks for your time today, Charlie. Thanks again to Charlie for joining us on the program. This is going to be a nightmare in Massachusetts. And again, you know, lawmakers had plenty of time to figure this out, right? They had over a year to work on this bill. And then they rush it into law. Now, listen, and this bill is so inherently bad that there, in a way, there's no good outcome here. Even if they had all their ducks in a row, we would still have legitimate complaints. But they don't, right? They are foisting a bunch of unfunded mandates on law enforcement and firearms instructors and would-be gun owners. All kinds of requirements that are not in effect or that are not yet written, but are ostensibly supposed to take effect in just a few days. And as Charlie said, a right delayed is a right denied. And it sounds like there are going to be an awful lot of delays and denials of our right to keep our arms in the very near future in Massachusetts. So we will be definitely paying attention to this, and we'll have an update for you in the coming days. All right, before we turn to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a moment. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred. Free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish, but in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many of us feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That's where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Now, they tirelessly seek out financial experts, particularly the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, and especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report that highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and you can get it absolutely free when you text the word IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. In today's recidivist report, we will turn once again to the website CWB Chicago, which does a fantastic job of reporting on crime in the Windy City. And as a result, I think the writers are somewhat jaded. I mean, they've seen a lot, right, when you're covering crime in Chicago. But this individual, today's subject of our recidivist report, astounded even the jaded and cynical reporters at CWB Chicago. Man gets arrested twice in one day while on electronic monitoring for robbery cases. Yeah, this is far from the first time that 54-year-old Sean Hill has been arrested by the Chicago police. As Tim Heckey, CWB Chicago, reports, the 54-year-old has been arrested 75 times since June of 2015. 12 times so far this year. And as Heckey writes, he is consistently described in Chicago Police Department paperwork as having significant untreated mental health issues, hands that have been mangled by frostbite. Many of his arrests involve allegations of randomly battering people, usually downtown, as well as theft. Most recently, Heckey writes, cops arrested Hill for theft in the Gold Coast on July 25th, even though he was on electronic monitoring for 4 pending robbery charges and 2 felony counts of unlawful restraint. He was released from the Near North District Police Station just a few hours later. About 90 minutes after he was released, he got arrested in the Gold Coast again. Twice in a 9-hour period, Hill was arrested while on electronic monitoring. Also, while on electronic monitoring last week, Hill allegedly spat on a 29-year-old woman and the next day physically assaulted the same woman in a parking garage. A second woman accused him of grabbing her at a bank in the Gold Coast. As Heckey writes, at the moment, Hill's inside the Cook County Jail. But that is a rare circumstance for Hill. While he is frequently accused of battering strangers on the street, Heckey writes, a crime that can be charged as a felony known as aggravated battery in public place, Hill is most often charged with misdemeanor battery charges. There was one exception in January of last year when he attacked a Cook County Sheriff's investigator inside a parking garage, calling her a stupid bitch, before lunging and hitting her in the head with a metal trash can lid. He ended up pleading guilty to aggravated battery in a public place. He received a sentence of 243 days served. Now, as Heckey writes, he says, we can already hear the complaints from some corners. How dare we publish a story about this troubled man? He says, the problem is that the story isn't really about Sean Hill. It's about the ineptitude and the failures of the authorities who are supposed to help him and keep the public safe. And I think that's absolutely right. You know, again, how many times do we hear politicians in Illinois or in Chicago specifically talk about, well, we need more gun laws, right? We need common sense gun reforms. We need to do something about the guns on the street. Inanimate objects are not pulling the trigger. There are individuals who are responsible for violent crime in Chicago, crimes that involve the use of a firearm and crimes that don't. In the case of Mr. Hill, you have somebody who has been using his fist primarily as his weapon of choice. But again, dozens of arrests over the past 10 years, a dozen arrests so far in 2024. The police know that he has mental issues. Presumably the courts do as well at this point. So why has Hill not been taken into custody and sent to a mental health facility for treatment? Why does he continually get stuck in this revolving door of the criminal justice system, spit back onto the street, and again, sometimes as little as hours later, arrested again with no change, no different response from Cook County officials? That's the problem. That's the issue here. Yes, Sean Hill, there's an argument that Sean Hill poses a danger to the community because of his dozens of arrests, primarily for theft, but again, also for battery. But why does the city of Chicago, why does Cook County continue to let Mr. Hill be a danger to the community after dozens of arrests? This is ridiculous. And unfortunately, I suspect that Mr. Hill is not the only one in Chicago with a similar criminal history. And again, little concern by the courts. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Kentucky, where a alleged home intruder made himself some food before he was stopped by a homeowner with a gun looking for grub in all the wrong places, perhaps. So this was in Jennings County, Kentucky. It was early Monday morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning, when the sheriff's office got a call from one of the residents inside the home saying, hey, we've got this stranger here, holding him for you. If you guys could get out of here, please, and take him into custody. According to the Jennings County Sheriff's Office, Skaggs broke into a home on County Road 150 South about 2 a.m. Monday morning, made himself a meal, but then rather than leave, he started wandering around the home and eventually entered a woman's bedroom. He then chased the woman around the home before a male homeowner got a gun and held Skaggs at gunpoint until police could arrive. Skaggs allegedly told police that he had tried to break into multiple homes, but the one that he actually picked, the door was unlocked. So just a reminder, no matter if you live in a densely populated urban environment or a low crime rural area, it's a good idea to keep your doors and windows locked at night. Skaggs was charged right now with one count of burglary, one count of residential entry, currently at the Jennings County Jail. Homeowner not facing any charges, obviously defending himself and the other occupants of that home from Mr. Skaggs, and thankfully did not have to pull the trigger to do so. Finally, today's good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Also from Kentucky, London, Kentucky, the members of the London Laurel Rescue Squad, who saved a missing man after 2 weeks of his disappearance. I mean, this is an incredible story. For 12 of those days, apparently, this guy was without food or water. Rescue Squad stated in a Facebook post that the terrain was rugged, search conditions were challenging, but the resilience and teamwork displayed by all involved were truly remarkable. This individual, Scott Allen Hearn, apparently the Rescue Squad was able to get a hold of his diary and learned that he had visited Bell Falls, which is in rural, near the Red River Gorge. So a search group, again from the London Laurel Rescue Squad, goes out there. They notice a shoe print. Then they find evidence of a walking stick in an area that typically isn't that traveled. So they were able to make their way through this path, and then they could eventually hear somebody yelling for help. They located Hearn below a cliff line, but up a steep embankment. Eric Walderman of the Wolf County Search and Rescue, also part of the efforts, and he said that when he approached Hearn, he told him who he was and said, "Hey, you're safe. We're going to get you out of here." In response, Hearn thanked him, asked for a hug, to which Walterman agreed. He said, "I think it was the best hug of both of our lives." Then the Kentucky State Police were called out to help conduct a hoist operation to try to get Hearn back to safety. London Laurel Rescue Squad in a Facebook post said, "We're incredibly grateful for the collaboration, relentless efforts of the numerous search and rescue teams and supporting agencies. This mission highlights the importance of unity and dedication in these search and rescue operations." The members of the London Laurel Rescue Squad, all volunteers. I imagine that is the case as well with the Wolf County Search and Rescue. These are men and women who sacrifice a lot of time, give a lot of money in order to, help be able to, again, bring people like Hearn to safety. And in this case, they were successful in doing so. So a tip of the hat and a job well done to all of those search and rescue volunteers there in Kentucky helping to save Scott Hearn after 2 weeks of him being missing. And it truly is an amazing story, and I'm glad that it's one with a happy ending. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Glad that you were with me on the program today, and I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Again, our guest will be Stephen Gutowski of The Reload. We'll be talking about the NRA trial and what comes next now that Judge Joel Cohen has said no monitor needed, but no Wayne LaPierre either. And that for the next 10 years, not a paid position at the NRA. He also offered a number of suggestions for possible reforms. Will the NRA accept the judge's recommendations, or will they try to fight those going forward as well? Again, we'll talk about that tomorrow with Stephen Gutowski of The Reload. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.